Okay, ready.
Put your grown-up face on. This is RTF material here now, okay? This is a different standard.
Yeah, I put on my Superman t-shirt now. I feel better.
Special edition. The most regular recurring guest. I think we actually need to just start a weekly show. Trad Patrick.
We should.
Rights and Duties. You can check out Rights and Duties on YouTube. You can follow him. He's Guido the Clerical Authoritarian, also known as Trad Patrick, on Twitter. And this is a quick I told you so segment. Because we did. We told you so. We told you that gas was going to be $5, that there was going to be a shortage, that it was coming, that it was pre-planned. This was back when we talked about the Suez Canal. The Suez Canal.
That was actually it was before it when we started.
Oh, really? I thought it was when the female captain ran aground in the Suez Canal.
Well, before we go on to anything, I don't know if anybody knows this, but I was actually talking to some people who work in shipping. That particular ship is still not allowed to leave. The Egyptian government is suing them, saying that they have to pay for the cost of the recovery that the Egyptian government had to pick up. Because the Egyptian government, of course, runs the canal. And so, of course, the Japanese government or whoever else it is that runs that, you know, through the company is saying, no, we're not paying. That's, you know, insurance, blah, blah, blah. The insurance companies are saying we don't pay for stupidity. So it's all back and forth. And that particular ship, just so everybody knows, on that particular ship are microprocessors.
I have experienced the shortage in that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm running a job right now where we need a bunch of rental cars, dozens, you know, like up to 50 rental cars right now for the crew that's working on the thing that I'm working on. And it doesn't matter if you go to Hertz, Enterprise, Budget, they all say we have a shortage of cars. I'm like, why do you have a shortage of cars? Well, we took the microprocessors out of our old cars and sold them back to the OEMs, the manufacturers, so that we can get new cars from them.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty normal. Matter of fact, I just heard from a particular manufacturer of electronics that we utilize in some of our work. And they said to us that they are now out. They have depleted their stock of material to manufacture servers. And at this point, they are now facing upwards of 90-day lead times. Now, lead time means from the time you order it until the time they ship it. So now you add in shipping, everything else. You're at about 100 days. Before you can get any of this stuff. So it's across the board. It's across the board. We warned everybody about this. I would say we're in May. I think we were talking about this in March, maybe the end of February. We started talking about this when I came out and said that by the summer you would be facing $5 a gallon gas. I never even could have assumed at that point that here we are in May. And we are now where there are states from – I'm getting reports from the East Coast all the way down to Arizona that have literally the gas stations are empty.
Yeah, I just got a text from a trusted source that says that the shortage is even being felt in Oklahoma, which is not supposed to be felt in Oklahoma. This was all related to – a stoppage at a certain pipeline in the southeast. It was only supposed to be localized. This woman on Twitter, she's got a blue check mark, so she's important. She's a real person. Katie Herzog says, I'm in North Carolina, and everything was normal when I left my house 2 hours ago, and now all the gas stations are closed. All of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got a voice chat from Steve Cunningham, Census Fidelium, same state, North Carolina. He said he had to drive an hour to find a gas station that had gas. And then he was still rolling the dice that they would still have gas when he got there.
Yeah, here's the problem with gas. This is what I want to tell people. I want to tell people, be very, very careful with gasoline. In the construction world, we keep a certain amount of gasoline on a job site, but we lock them up in very, very special cabinets. And the reason they're locked up in very special cabinets, we're hitting the summertime, right? Let's be safe here, folks. I know there's a lot of panic that's going to happen, but you got to be safe. If you put gas cans in your garage in the summertime, it's not the liquid that goes on gas on fire. It's the vapors.
Mm-hmm.
And when those vapors get super heated, those cans can expand and literally explode. And there have been several cases where they have set fire to homes and people have burned their homes down from having gasoline improperly stored in their homes. So a couple of things you want to look for. One, you can't buy these cabinets. They cost about $1,000. Okay. Very expensive. I'm not going to tell you go out and buy them. You can find them cheap, on eBay or Craigslist, but they're probably going to be damaged, in which case the protection in them is no longer valid. So there are some things you can do. You can get gas cans. If you get a gas can made relatively recently, they have vents on them. So you want to make sure they're vented. You don't want to vent that in your garage because the garage doors are all closed. No windows are typically in garages. You can asphyxiate yourself. You don't want to do that either. Okay. So if you're going to do it, if you have a shed out in the backyard or something like that, put them in there. Keep a fan going in there if you can. I know electrical costs are going to rise. This is, and let's go back to this pipeline. This pipeline had this hack, which is complete and utter bullcrap. Okay. It wasn't hacked. They're blaming it on ransomware out of Russia. Now, without going into too much of what I do for a living, we know a lot about hacking in our industry. I build data centers, okay? And I build a certain portion of the data center. Long story short, we know about hacking. Russia has some of the worst hackers in the world. Matter of fact, if you look at 90% of the hacks that have happened, they're all young American men, okay? Very few. There's been a few big name hackers out of Russia, but it's very, very few. Most of them are American. If we go back to Stuxnet or Hart exploits that happened a couple of years ago, one of them actually affected the Iranian centrifuges. That particular hack, if you go to YouTube and you Google Zero Day, there's a free documentary where they actually admit that it was the U.S. government and Israel that are responsible for that particular hack. Now, if that only happened a couple days ago, you would not be feeling this at the gas station pumps today. It would take theoretically to deplete the local reserves where you are. There's usually a refinery or there's a pipeline. There's somewhere that fills up the gas trucks in your area. That would not have dried up in a day or two. Okay, most gas stations, they fill up maybe about once a day, okay? They have very large tanks underground, very large tanks. So what's happening is the gas stations are doing what they always do in these situations. They are reserving. And so what that means is that they get to a point of probably about half to two-thirds of their tank capacity, and they shut down the pumps. The reason is they can't go below a certain level. It becomes dangerous, just like it becomes dangerous in your home. They cannot bleed those tanks completely dry, and they can't overfill them. So there's two situations that they can't do. So if they get to about half to two-thirds of the capacity of the tank, they have to shut down the pumps. That is not a government thing. That's a safety thing, okay? That's number one. Number two, this was happening a long time ago. And so what they did was when they shut everything down, they shut down a lot of the refineries, okay, or they went into what they call skeleton crews, which means that they had very small amount of people working because they typically work in very confined spaces. So they had cut that down. They cut down those, and so they could only produce X amount of gas over the last almost 2 years now. And with that happening, there was already this looming. That's why you had seen gas prices start to go up. Okay. What they're trying to do is they're trying to find a scapegoat. So if they can have a ransomware attack, which, by the way, is, I want to say, it's almost impossible on a pipeline or something of that nature, because their systems are behind such ironclad firewalls. There's so many security checks and everything that they do. These guys have literal geniuses working their IT. It's not a guy who just comes in and sets up your freaking email or puts print servers on your laptop. Okay. These are guys who know what they're doing, and they're constantly updating firmware. They're constantly updating operating systems so that they're always ahead of these things happening. So number one, this had to be, if it was this, it was extremely coordinated. And just like certain other events, and we're only going on podcast, right?
Yeah, this is going to be voice only.
So just like 9/11, when they had plenty of warning, it's the same thing here. So either they were warned about this a while ago and nobody did anything,
mm-hmm.
or it's not real and they're just trying to find a scapegoat. Now, this particular pipeline, one of the experts said, they're based out of Georgia. They said they got the pipeline to Maryland rerunning at limited capacity, but they're not going to have full capacity until they remove all the ransomware and they update all the systems. And they're saying that could be by the weekend. Now, to restart a refinery, I used to do petrochem work a long time ago. To restart a refinery takes 2 weeks. That means for every day they're down, it's 2 weeks it's going to take them to come up. That means to full capacity in 7 days, it's going to take them 3 months to be back at full operating capacity. Now, we were right. We told you gas was going to be the thing that was going to set off the economic collapse.
This is what we talked about. It wasn't even that long ago either. I mean, it's interesting, I guess, being proven right, let's say 5 years after the fact or 10 years after the fact or, you know, or after you're dead or whatever. I mean, it's much more of an instant gratification to sit here and be like, yeah, we were just talking about this like a month ago. This is coming. $5 gas is coming. You said it. $5 gas. That was the beginning of the Suez Canal podcast that we did. And one of the things we talked about was how quickly your energy will dry up. People plan for all kinds of contingencies, and that's good. We need to do that. That's like part of your duty as a husband, father, protector, provider. Providing for cooling your family in the summer, heating your family in the winter. These are kind of like basic things. Mm-hmm. And, look, when it got really cold in Texas and everyone had like a 2 week heads up that the winter storm was coming and all this, or at least, you know, several days of heads up, you know, I kind of look at it and I'm like, well, yeah, it got cold. I get it. It also gets cold in other parts of the country. And yes, no, I understand. There's not the infrastructure in Texas that there is in other parts of the country. You don't have snow plows. You don't have salt trucks. The houses aren't built in such a way to where, you know, like the water pipes are in the interior of the house, not the exterior walls where they're, if they freeze, they'll burst and all this. So people had a lot of problems in Texas. I understand. At the same time, I look at it and say, look, that was a mini wake up call. Some people were without power for a while. You know, some people were without power for over a week and it was cold. It was cold inside people's houses. I mean, Pat, where you live, it gets cold. Where I live, it gets cold. But if it's in the 30s or 40s inside your house and you cannot get warmer than that, I mean, that's pretty miserable, you know, so I'll give it to them. That being said, though, we talked about how that's a wake-up call. we need to get serious. We need half the things that you and I talk about are like practical. We need to get off the grid. We need to get off the financial system. We need to get off of usury. We need to get off of all of these drugs that they've addicted us to. And here we are, this woman in North Carolina, within 2 hours, her whole state is shut down. Can't drive anywhere. If you think you're going to say, oh, well, I'll just drive somewhere. You know, like my plan is that I'm going to make an overland escape to my land that's, I don't know, 6 hours away. Well, you might not make it. You might not make it to your bug out. If that's your bug out plan is to get 6 hours and it's more than one tank of gas, that might not be the best bug out plan. And look, this is just, we're learning. This is another data point. Here we are in the Joe Biden usurper in chief, fake Catholic president. We're like a few months into his administration and the planned shortages are here.
Well, so number one, I want to say that all you have to do is go on to the History Channel and watch the Mountain Men, for example. These guys live in the furthest, most remote places in the world. They don't exactly always have heat. They don't exactly always have water. But somehow these guys seem to live, and they're very happy, as a matter of fact. I mean, the one guy's like 80, and he's out there hunting bears. Everything is possible. It's just a matter of whether or not you're willing to do it. Now, if you go back even further, in the early 2000s, there was a lot of shows about preppers. They were all over the place, these shows. You ever notice how they shut all of those shows down within about a year or two? They shut them all down because a lot of these people said exactly what you said. You can't have a realistic plan to bug out to some place where you're going to take all these stores of goods and you're going to drive 6 hours away. You don't know if there's going to be gas. You don't know if there's going to be infrastructure. You don't know if there's going to be cars dead on the road. You don't know all of these situations. So there are options. You can bug in. You can stay in your home. Is it ideal? No. But a lot of people, let's be honest, a lot of people don't have the money. Unfortunately, in our society today, you know, there's a lot of boomers and neocons and free market capitalists who like to tell you that how base the system is and everything else. But we could just look at people in America and Canada, for example, or even most of Europe, who can't afford to buy a home. They can't do it. And we're facing gas shortages. I talked about it a couple times, how there's 7 million people who are going to probably be foreclosed on or in serious danger of being foreclosed on. Biden is nervous. He's like, you know, pooping the proverbial bed right now. And he's going on TV and saying, look, if you're on unemployment and you don't take a job, we're going to take you off unemployment. The problem is anybody who's ever been on unemployment knows for a fact that there's no checking. They ask you to put into the little computer system, you know, three jobs that you applied for. And you just go onto Zillow and you say, I applied for this one at this company. I sent them a resume. I didn't get a response. You could do that three times. They're never going to question it. They never do. Because there's no way to verify that you did or did not. So him saying that is really just placating to everybody, because he's either really ignorant of how the system works, or he's even worse, he's lying. So both situations are bad. The reality of the situation is it's not just gas. We've talked about this too. It's rising lumber prices. You're going to see gas. Guess what? I want to break the news to everybody here. Dun, 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 breaking news. All of your food travels by truck. Diesel is about 25% more expensive than unleaded, which means that if there's no gas, there's no diesel, which means the trucks are stopped. If the trucks are stopped, the food in those refrigerated trailers goes bad after the third day. Yeah, after the second day, it can't be sold.
There's no food without trucking. There's no Amazon Prime without trucking. This entire country, like the life that we live, is contingent upon our freeway and highway system. We are not a society built around the trains anymore. The trains do not bring us the things that we need. Trains move a lot of stuff. They move a lot of heavy stuff. But in terms of the immediate effect to your life that you will feel within 2 days, if the truck stopped driving on the road, there is no food in the grocery stores. If you're listening to the podcast right now and you're in the Southeastern Conference, if you're in the SEC and you say, wow, there's no more gas at the gas station, do you know what the first thing you should do is? Go to the grocery store. Go to the grocery store. Absolutely.
I've been telling people, if you have the space, you have a garage. Let's say you're renting. You have a garage. Don't park your car in the garage, okay? That's a stupid waste of space, okay? Buy shelves. Buy freezers. You can get freezers used everywhere. You can get them pretty cheap, chest freezers, all this and that. You can buy extra refrigerators. Get that stuff in there. Buy a generator. Buy all these things. You can even get solar powered generators. I know nobody wants to hear that, but you're probably going to need something like that. But also buy stuff you can. You know, learn some of these skills that we as a people have lost. We have lost the entire ability to do things that used to keep us alive. I just got a breaking thing here from the stock market. Select sector, SPDR Trust, it's an energy trust, is crashing right now. It is crashing. This is bad. This is really bad. I mean, everybody is now saying next stop, $5 and $6 a gallon gas. We were right. You don't want to see those trusts start tanking. When they start tanking, that's a bad place to be. They're down right now from a high of about 56. They're down to about 53. It looks like 53 and change right now. Any outlook looking at my charts right now, they're probably going to open somewhere around 52 to 50. So that's not good. I just want to go out and point that out. Everybody who's sitting there and they're like, oh, I'm going to go into trading. I'm going to make a ton of money in the stock market and everything like that. And I'm going to be a professional trader. I got news for you. When oil and gas tank, everything else is going to go down with it. I know that, Amazon, you mentioned Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime is already mentioning that, 2-day delivery on a lot of items is not available. Mm. Jet fuel comes from these same places. Their jet fuel is made in the same refineries. Okay. Jet fuel is just another product of gas, manufacturing, gas and oil manufacturing. That's all it is. It's not some synthesis of chemicals that they make. And even if it was, they can't get them. So this has a lot of blame. And I don't think it's even just Trump. I think you got to go back to Bush. I think you got to go all the way back to Bush. You got to go back, 20 years now. Bush saw it, didn't do anything. Of course, housing crashed, credit crashed. They didn't do anything about it. They didn't really fix the systems. They already knew there were reports that people like Warren Buffett and others were giving him, saying that the supply lines are a mess and we need to start looking at changes to this. When you have Warren Buffett saying that, you know, the global economy is kind of a mistake. We're putting too much eggs in other people's baskets. And what happens when all this goes to pot, when those other countries are going to say, we got to take care of our own. Let me tell you something, people. When China says we got to take care of our own, we don't have enough fuel and stuff to send it to you. And if we do, we're going to charge you astronomical rates. Guess where 90% of your medicine comes from? Your antibiotics come from. They come from pharmaceutical companies that your government allowed to outsource to biopharmaceutical facilities in places like China. Okay. And even if it's down in Mexico, you can say, okay, well, that's not far. It's just in Mexico. Guess what? Can't get here. It's got to get here somehow. You brought up trains. Eisenhower was a complete and utter idiot. Instead of working on the infrastructure of the train rails, he built the highway system, which is a proven disaster for this country. I love the excuse that a lot of people will make and go, well, America's too big to have a train like Europe. Well, guess what? It's too big not to have a train like Europe. We should have had trains that were able to run all over. You could put refrigerated cars on trains. You could do all this. You could get produce from California.
No, I mean, it's – Pat, it is madness. It's madness that you cannot get on a train in Los Angeles and be in San Francisco within an hour or two. I mean, that's madness. In Japan, you can get anywhere on a train.
Mm-hmm.
Madness that you can't sit on a train in the United States of America, the most advanced country, the most advanced industrial country, technologically, militarily, economically, supposedly, culturally, although you and I know we see right through that. But why can't you sit on a train, Los Angeles to New York, sit in a nice dining car, have a steak, have a glass of wine, maybe take a 12-hour train ride across the country? Why is that not a thing here? It should be a thing.
Well, because they felt that at the time they were propping up. So again, here we go into the government picking winners and losers. They picked the automotive unions, because the automotive unions had a lot more money than the train unions. They had a lot more power, a lot more influence in the government. And so the automotive unions were able to push for the idea of these highways and byways and freeways. You know, we talk about the lone Route 66, right? Route 66 was this fantastic road. It was one road, right? And you could stop at all these little things and everything like that. Now it's like bypass that, get on this this interstate, I-90 or 85 or whatever else. And you can go miles and miles and miles without even being able to pass a gas station. Isn't that wonderful in a time when we have no gas? Now, nobody thought about this. Nobody was smart enough to think about this at the time, because when we pick city planners or when we pick people to be in charge of transportation, we pick a guy that was a mayor of a defunct town in Indiana, you know, that's a disordered man, to be in charge of transportation.
I know you don't like E. Michael Jones, but I thought it was really funny. One of my interviews with him where I asked him about Buttigieg, because apparently Buttigieg is like not literally his neighbor, but pretty close to his neighbor, like same neighborhood, couple streets over, something like that. Like he knows the guy. Mm-hmm. And I asked him about Buttigieg becoming Department of Transportation Secretary and all this. And he went on and on and on about how they can't even like – pick up the trash in their city. You know, he goes, you can't trust a man who treats the you know what as an organ for you know what to pick up your trash, let alone running the Department of Transportation for the entire country. I mean, DOT is pretty powerful. People don't understand that too. People really, I and when I say people, I mean myself as well. We underestimate the power and the scope and the purview of all these various departments that fall underneath the executive branch of the government of the United States of America. And well, DOT is one of them. Department of Transportation, they run FAA, they run airplanes, they run the interstates, they run all kinds of stuff that affects your life. You sit in your hotel, your apartment, your condo, your house, your duplex, wherever you live, your trailer, and you order something online, DOT is involved. You drive somewhere, DOT is involved. You pump gas, DOT is involved. You register your vehicle, DOT is involved. I mean, this is a massive, massive department that wields incredible power, and it has now been given over to a man who, well, he likes the poo-poo.
Yeah, I mean it's it really is sad, because you know the idea of these types of things is that they should have been people who were civil engineers. They should have been people who did not have politics in mind. They had the best interests of the engineering in mind. You know, when I engineer a site, I don't go and hire engineers and go, so what exactly are your politics? I go, so what do you know about code? What do you know about supply lines? What do you know about what do you know about building? What do you know about this? You know, I give tests to people who are coming in and I say, okay, pass this test. And nowhere on that test does it say anything about how do you feel about disordered individuals? You know, these are the questions that should be asked and these are the things we should be doing to put things up. Now, I just want to tell you just in the last little bit that we've been on here, Jack Posobiec, who, you know, is propped up as this, you know, Patreon of conservatism in America. He's finally caught on. You know, all this time we've been saying it, but everybody's got to listen. It only matters when Posobiec says it, right? Mm-hmm. But there are people literally on his tweet because he's showing a video of the lines, the gas lines. Now, this is – of course, you're going to make fun of my age, but in the 70s, this is what happened. And trust me, when this happened in the 70s, it didn't go away. It happened in the late 70s. It didn't go away until the 80s, okay? So you're not talking about something that they're going to flip a switch and it's going to change tomorrow. It doesn't work like that. They are limiting. I'm getting messages and emails from people telling me that where they live, they are limiting people to 10 gallons of gas, okay? Again, this is not the government right now doing this. This is the gas stations. Remember that. Most of your gas stations, I want to make sure everybody knows this. Most of your gas stations, even though it says Sunoco or whatever else on the sign, they're independently owned. Okay. It's some guy who went out. He had the land. He put all his money into building this gas station. And they make pennies. And I mean pennies on a gallon of gas. They make almost nothing, which is why gas station stores have gotten bigger and bigger, and you'll hardly ever see a place that only sells gas because they don't make any money on that. They are limiting it because they cannot go. They do not want to risk damaging their equipment. They cannot go below that about one-third of their tank capacity. They cannot do it. And even for them, it's worse because if they go below it for too long, they get condensation in the tank, which means they get water into the gas, which means now they're going to have to pump that gas out before they can refill it, which means they have to put a cleaner additive into the tank, flush that out, and then put the new gas in. So it's a very big cost. It's a very big expense that the gas stations are taking on. So don't, whatever you do, don't blame the individual gas stations. It's not their fault. Those are usually just businessmen trying to make a living. In a lot of cases, it may be a guy who owns two or three, and you think he's a billionaire or a millionaire. I'm telling you right now as a business guy, businessmen right now, independent businessmen. I'm not talking about the Walmarts or the Amazons. People have to understand that there is a difference between those guys and the independent business guys. The independent business guys are losing their shirt right now. I can't tell you how many contractors I've talked to said they've had to close. They can't afford it with the fuel prices, the material prices, everything else. They can't compete. Your government is picking winners and losers, and that's what this is all about. The winners out there.
Let's talk about Tesla.
Winner.
Everybody wants to talk about Tesla right now. They're saying, oh, yeah, well, at least I can still charge my Tesla.
Well, that's another problem. That's a malnomer. Okay, for everybody who doesn't know what that means, it means that – that is basically a wolf in sheep's clothing. In order to charge that Tesla, you have to plug in that free cord at the supermarket into your car. And in order for that free thing to charge your car, it runs on electric. Electric, for those of you who don't know, runs by burning coal. Okay? Almost 90% of the energy in this country is run by burning coal. Okay, if you ever get a chance to go and tour an electric generation facility, go and do it because they'll take you and they'll show you through a looking glass just how hot that coal has to get. All of these things, in order for them to get that coal, it has to come either by train. Most cases it comes by train, but it also comes by truck. And to run the facility, they need fuel. Okay, so there's a lot of things that all these people like, I'm just going to go and buy a Tesla. I bought a Tesla last year. Ha ha. I don't need gas. What's going to happen when you plug that little cord in and it ain't working? Your Tesla is not going nowhere. Okay. You're dead in the water. You're in a worse position in that Tesla than a person in one of those environment killing gas guzzlers. Because at least the guy in the gas guzzler, he can go somewhere. And in worst case scenario, he can find some abandoned car on the side of the road and siphon the gas out. Don't do it. You'll swallow some. It's disgusting. You'll throw up. Trust me, I know. Don't do it. But you can. In an ultimately bad situation, you can siphon gas. You can get it out. You can get it into your, you can get it into your car. And in most cases, all you need is about a quarter of a gallon of gas to get you home if you're only within a few miles of home, right? That's all you need. You don't even need a lot. But with those Teslas, you need a good charge if you're dead. And that good charge could be upwards of 2 hours. And in that 2 hours, that thing could go off, especially if they're limiting fuel right now. So they're going to limit fuel to those generation facilities. You saw it. You brought up Texas. You saw that green energy does not work. It fails every single time. The reason is there's not enough wind. There's not enough sunlight. There's not enough water pressure. I mean, they got to regulate these dams all day and night. And trust me, even the dams in your water, your hydroelectric facilities, runs on some form of fuel oil. Okay. This is what people don't understand. They don't get this. And this is because they're all brainwashed. They believe that the free market is going to save them every time. I have a show coming out tomorrow where I explain to people the free market is no different from socialism. You know, we like to use the term owning the means of production, but we don't even know that the means of production is your labor. And in that case, the free market owns you just as much as the socialist owning the means of production. The socialist just owns the company, whereas in the free market, they own you. They dictate to you all these things. So what you're seeing right now is the result of the free market global economy crashing. And this, I can guarantee you, is 110% planned. It is not organic. It didn't just happen. This is planned. This was planned out long ago.
Yeah, well, let's talk about, you know, everybody knows my thoughts on Trump because I feel very betrayed by him. I think a lot of people feel betrayed by him, rightly so. And so a lot of people think, oh, well, maybe Mike's a closet Biden guy because he just rags on Trump all the time. Let's just talk about Biden real quick. He promised in the presidential debates that he was going to end fossil fuels. He said he wanted to shut down these pipelines. He said he wanted to do this, and now it's happening.
Well, let's go back even with Trump to a degree, right? Nobody really got the Keystone XL pipeline running. Trump didn't either. As I said before, executive orders don't work. They kick the can. That's all they do. And his executive orders failed again. And the Keystone pipeline was never brought up to full capacity. Now, Keystone pipeline, I want to make sure everybody knows, that's not fuel oil. That was natural gas. Okay, I want to make sure everybody understands that. There's a big difference. So you can't really compare the Keystone XL pipeline to this. That was natural gas. That's fracking. That's natural gas. It's very different than fuel oil. There's big differences. I'm not going to go into the technical differences between the two, but they're huge. But he didn't open up in any real way the drilling. He didn't build new pipelines. So this entire country is actually dependent on four major pipelines. The Colonial Pipeline, which is the one that was affected, is based out of Atlanta, Georgia. That's the one that went down. The other three, one of them does not work at full capacity right now. The other two are at about 65 to 75% capacity. They don't feed the whole country. They only feed certain areas. There's no pipeline that goes from one place and crisscrosses the entire country. It's too big. You can't maintain it. It's almost impossible, right? So a lot of these go under the water. A lot of these take a lot of money. They take a lot of time. When they put into effect a lot of these environmental rules, they kind of shut these guys down. They kind of put these guys in a position where they couldn't really do much. So they were operating already at reduced capacity. So this is very long. And I say Biden is just the result of everybody from Bush Sr. on down. He's just the result. Okay. Trump has a lot of blame in this, a lot of blame. He didn't go back against the people with the shutdowns. He didn't sit there and tell the states, you're not shutting anything down. Keep the people working. Nobody's going to die. We're not going to have this massive outbreak. Somebody's going to get sick. Great. Yeah, whatever. They'll get over it. It'll be painful for a couple of days. They'll be back at work. I'm not saying nobody died from COVID, because I like all these people go, my great grandmother died from COVID. How old was your great grandmother? 92. Well, there's a good chance she was going to die from anything. Sorry to break the news to you. Okay. If she got sick, she was going to die. She's 92 years old. I'm not saying that I'm cold and heartless and all this and that, but let's be realistic here. Okay. Everybody made a mistake. Biden made the mistakes too. They all own blame, from Bush Sr. on to Biden. They all own blame. Obama knew these things was coming. Bush knew these things was coming. Clinton knew these things was coming. They all knew it. There were economists from the wazoo saying the supply lines are crap, they're falling apart, the globalism and the global economy is going to fail. We're not going to be able to keep up with this. The demand is going to outweigh the ability to bring the goods to market. That was the problem that nobody listened to. Forget the lockdowns, forget the COVID, forget all the other excuses. But every single one of these presidents, including Trump and including Biden, and Biden knew more than anybody else. So he has the most blame because he spent 8 years as the vice president. And before that, 20, 25 years, 30 years in the Senate. So he knew better than anybody else that this was coming, because he sat there in these committees. He listened to these people say, you have to stop doing this. But instead of us looking at what's good for America, we always looked at how do we keep China and Mexico? We have to take care of these poor, poor people. Let's send a whole bunch of our jobs and everything there. Let's send all of our – let's let these biopharmaceutical companies make all of our medicine in China. That's a great idea. They didn't listen. They didn't think that the more people they let into this country – and Biden's the worst, because while all this is going on, he's signing executive orders to bring 70,000 more people into this country when we can't take care of the people that are already here. When does everybody take off the rainbow colored glasses that they have on and see the truth? It's they live in reverse. Instead of putting the glasses on, you need to take the freaking things off, because globalism is the death of nations. We have put, do you know who's going to survive all this? China. China is going to survive all this. You want to know why? Because they have everything. They have it all. And we were complacent, from Nixon to Clinton to Bush. And they all just kept giving China more and more and more and more power, because the corporation said they need to be able to go out there and do it. So again, the government picked the winners over the losers. Who's the losers? You, me, and all the other people who work for a living, like the bunch of schmucks that we are.
Well, now let me layer in something here that is directly in your strike zone, my strike zone, because we've both been to the Middle East. And we all know that a lot of the petroleum in the world comes from the Middle East. On the very same day that we are witnessing gas shortages in North Carolina, South Carolina, Florida, Georgia, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Kentucky, on the very same day that the Southeastern Conference is being hammered by gas shortages, and we're seeing Jimmy Carter era gas lines forming while we're recording this, and it's getting worse by the minute. As I'm monitoring social media while we're talking, it's getting worse and worse and worse. On the very same day, we see missiles being fired, supposedly by Hamas, into Jerusalem, both sides declaring war on each other, another Mideastern war coming to the forefront. Now, you said Trad Patrick, Rights and Duties on YouTube, Trad Patrick on the Twitter. You said that Biden knew that this was coming. Nothing is random. There are no coincidences. This was pre-planned. Does that same logic extend to the global political economy? Does that same logic extend to the geopolitical struggles that we're seeing? Is it a coincidence, Trad Patrick, in other words, that we are now seeing on the very same day war in the Middle East?
No.
And economic war at home?
No, not at all. It's actually, if you look at it, it's worse than that, right? So they started bombing a few hospitals over there in Palestine. And then they went and did the what I would say is almost the precursor to global war. They started attacking the Al-Aqsa Mosque, which is also known in English as the Dome of the Rock. That is one of the two of the most holiest places to Islam. And they went out and they attacked that, and it's on fire. And it's burning. And so we're seeing what could possibly be the precursor. I mean, we've got the government blaming Russia for a hack on a pipeline. We've got Israel burning down a mosque. We've got Russia entering into the Ukraine again. We've got Biden pretty much Putin pretty much threatening to take Russia off the petrodollar and go to some sort of Iranian currency transfer system. If you want to really look at this from a historical standpoint, everything you're seeing now is the lead up, the precursor to World War II. We have economic instability. We have credit crisis. Okay. Usury has led to almost every war that we've been in, and usury is at phenomenal heights right now. So, I mean, here they go. They say it's just they're blaming this on a hacker group in Russia, and it's ransomware, right? Ransomware is a joke. Just let everybody know. Somebody gets inside your system. They say you can't have control of your system till you pay us a bunch of money. Well, that's not how it works. You unplug all your systems from the internet. You wipe them. You put all new stuff in. But guess what? That takes a friggin' long time to do. These companies work on what's called an INC system, or an instrumentation and control system. It's basically a system that runs all the pumps, the valves, the flames, the widgets, the gadgets. All of the systems run on these automated systems. This is the danger of automation. Instrumentation and controls is nothing more than a fancy term for automation. Okay. Those systems have a lot of programming logic, logic gates, we call them, logic functions, if or statements, a lot of these things that go into them. And they don't necessarily have those backed up. And even if they do, they can't take that whole backup and put that back on, because they don't know specifically what exploit the hacker used to get in. And that's the problem. So now they have to start from scratch. They have to go in and rewrite everything. That means they have to go and bring in a whole slew of people working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to bring these systems up. And it's not going to happen in a week. It's just the reality of the situation is that most people don't understand how these systems work. They're extremely, extremely complicated, overly complicated, because there's no manual solution to any of these systems. You cannot manually run any of these systems. They have to be run on these systems, because a person can't do a lot of the stuff that needs to be done, the opening, the closing of the valve, the keeping it at this pressure, releasing this amount of pressure, all this stuff. They can't do it. They can't do it because we've overcomplicated everything. And so, yeah, this is all the same. It's all the same. Everything leads up. We're just about almost 100 years out from World War II. If we really want to talk about the start of World War II, we're talking in the mid-30s, right? That's really kind of the start. We're like 90 years out. We were only 20 years out from World War One.
I would even argue that the start of World War II was 1918. You know, the end of World War One and the end of the monarchies and the, you know, the American and British meddling in Europe, the shaming of Germany. You know, there's a lot more than just the 1930s, and you know that was a symptom of a problem. Do you think, Trad Patrick, that there's going to be troops on the ground sent in to the Middle East as a result of this latest conflict, or any other ramp up in Syria, in Libya, in Iraq, in Afghanistan?
I think it's going to be harder. I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to push for it. But I think it's going to be harder to get people to go along with it. I don't think that they're going to care so much that the people aren't going to go along with it. Mm-hmm. I think that there's going to be a total propaganda. I think you're going to probably see some sort of false flag. I want to be honest with you. If you live in a major city, I'd be nervous right now. I'd be very nervous. I'm going to make a couple of predictions here. Number one, by Wednesday, you're probably going to have Biden come on and reinstate rationing laws. We haven't seen rationing laws in this country since World War II. So it's almost 100 years since we've seen a real rationing law come down from the federal government. But I think he's going to do it. I think they're going to push for some false flag, or they're going to push somebody to do something. Maybe it's not here in America. I hope it's not. But to be honest with you, if I'm following suit for the way things happen, I'm going to say it's going to happen probably in America. That's going to jive up the red, white, and blue grunge style tattooed freaks to get all on board playing Toby Keith songs up the wazoo, you know, talking about foots and butts and stuff like that. And they're going to get most of America on board with it. I think initially America is not going to be on board with it. Just like World War II, initially they weren't on board with it. Then Pearl Harbor happens. And Pearl Harbor was manufactured by the U.S. It was Roosevelt's idea to put a blockade against Japan. He had no legal right. If you listen to Father Charles Coughlin, he does many speeches about this, that the embargo and the blockades against Japan were completely illegal. They were against international law. They were against American law. And if you're Japan, what other option do you have to do but to retaliate? So I do think that there's going to be some sort of push to get us into war in the Middle East. Unfortunately, it's just like World War II. It's a war we don't belong in. I made a post today and people got mad at me because I said I'm going to sit here and eat popcorn because everything that's happening between the Jewish people in Israel and the Palestinians over there is not our problem. It has nothing to do with us. We need to stay out of it. So I've been there.
Well, you know, it's kind of like, do you remember a couple years ago, several years ago, I'm going to say something controversial.
Oh, dear. Is somebody else on the call with us?
This is going to be controversial. No, nobody's out. Nobody's on the call.
Oh. I thought I saw somebody else in there. Is he there?
Well, yeah. I mean, technically the NSA is on the call with us right now.
All right. Yeah, I saw somebody.
No, they're listening. They're listening. No, I had dialed Steve Cunningham about an hour ago, but he didn't answer. Let's see if he would join. The controversial thing I was going to say, which is kind of related to what you were saying, is that do you remember when somebody walked into a disordered nightclub in the state of California, and he was a Muslim guy, and he shot up the place, and then he ended up getting shot. And I remember I was away for the weekend. I was working on something, and I called my wife. I told her what happened, and we're both kind of like, all right. That's kind of like how it goes, you know? Like, both are our enemies. both are our stated enemies of the Catholic Church, of free society, of Western civilization. And if they fight each other and they kill each other, I mean, yeah, it's bad. It's tragic. You know, we don't like, you know, we treasure human life. Human life is creation of God. It's a reflection of his image, all those things. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know what? If you two want to duke it out and I don't have to do anything and you both kill each other and that kind of puts a bow on it, I can think of other things to worry about. You know, like, I don't know if that's about as spicy as an opinion as I'm going to give on this particular podcast, but that is a similar like mindset that I think a lot of people have or should have when the Palestinians and the Israelis go at it. I don't, the only reason the United States gets involved in this is because of the Protestants, the evangelicals. The evangelicals love Israel. They want to build the temple. They want to rebuild the temple. They love the state of Israel. They love everything Jewish. The last thing they ever want to do is convert the Jews.
So, you
and
know,
I'm sitting here like, you'll convert Muslims, you'll convert Hindus, you'll convert pagans, you'll convert Satanists. You definitely want to convert Catholics, don't you? You call us the whores of Babylon. We're on the bandwagon to hell. But the last thing you want to do is convert the perfidious Jews?
Well, I mean, it goes lock, stock, and barrel. Of course, there's the saying that, of course, the Dome of the Rock has to be destroyed in order for the Third Temple to go up. So, I mean, we could theoretically be looking at biblical events right now. I'm not saying it is, but I'm just saying that that Third Temple is also the end of all of us. So let's hope that's not the case. Maybe we should hope that's the case. I don't know. But, you know, the problem is you're right. You know, nobody, including Catholics, let's be honest, Catholics today have taken a large step away from people like Father Fahey, Saint Colbe, Father Fahey, Father Charles Coughlin, Pope Pius X, Pope Pius IX, all these people who said, look, I don't hate the Jews. I want them to convert. I want them to convert. That's what I want them to do. I want them to stop being
no, but that's
stupid.
That's an act of love. People always misinterpret this, and they always assign these, you know, isms to people who talk about this subject. And the fact of the matter is that when you love someone, you want them to be better. You know, if your daughter becomes a pole dancer, the true act of love, the true act of charity is to yank her off the pole and correct her. If your daughter is on the pole, you failed. You failed as a father. And to the extent that our fellow human beings cast themselves into eternal fire, into hell, for all eternity, no escape. There is no hope. We dare not hope, Robert Barron, that hell gets cleared out in the end. To the extent that our fellow human beings wind up there, that is a failure. Am I my brother's keeper? Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And so it is an act of charity. It's an absolute act of charity to want to convert everyone, Jew, pagan, Muslim, alike. So to sit there and say, well, they're the chosen people and they're good how they are, and and we just have a privileged path, that actually is a way of despising people. That's a disordered, that's a deep and profound hatred of your fellow man to take that approach. So, yeah, I mean, but what we're talking about right now could easily land us in hot water, because we're talking about the fact that you need to convert to Christ in order to merit salvation.
Yeah, but
and yes, that even if you're a Jew, you have to convert to Christ. Everyone has to convert.
Except the church doesn't take that position anymore.
No, they don't.
And I think, honestly, you know, I was watching the SSPX Crisis in the Church series today. It's a great episode. I think everybody should watch it. Should Catholics attend the Novus Ordo Mass? And I think it makes a great point, but I think it makes a scary point to me, because a lot of us started talking and thinking about this in our chat room, and it really is, everything has gone downhill really rapidly since the mid-1960s. And what happened in the mid-1960s? Vatican II. Vatican II gave birth to Bugnini, who gave us the new mass, who gave us all this stuff, which basically took the mass and made it unappeasing to God. And so there's a very, very good argument that they have on that series today where it says, look, you don't have an obligation to attend the Novus Ordo Mass. And a matter of fact, I've gone to SSPX confession, and I said, Father, I missed Mass. And he said, did you have an option? I said, well, no, Father, I was traveling, and the only thing that I could get to was a Novus Ordo Mass. He said, well, you didn't miss Mass. He goes, you didn't commit a sin. He goes, did you do something else? And I said, yeah, I prayed the rosary. I read my breviary. I did all these things. I still kept the day holy. He says, well, then you didn't really commit a sin. He goes, because had you gone, that would have been another story, because you know better.
Well, this is pretty controversial, and people dog on the PX for their stance on this particular subject. But if you were to actually click the link and watch Father Robertson and listen to the logic behind his argument, he says things like, well, if you knew that down the road at the Catholic Church that particular priest was a known, stated, public heretic, and if you were to take your family there, you knew that he was going to blaspheme our Blessed Mother, then attending that Mass would be an occasion of sin. Mm-hmm. You would, or at a minimum, you would be excused from attending that Mass. And he said, now suppose that you have a priest who is just a public drunkard, and you have very good evidence that he shows up to Mass drunk, and he's profaning the altar and potentially not even confecting the sacrament. You do not have an obligation to attend that Mass. All right. So you take it a step further and you look at the Novus Ordo. You look at who was involved, Vatican II, Bugnini, the destruction, the whole point of it, the Protestantization of it, the objective within the eyes of God, the objective dilution of the Mass. If not the objective slap in the face to Almighty God. And you say, okay, is this the same? And I think that reasonable people will fall on both sides of the issue, and I totally understand that. I think very reasonable people will look at it and say, this is like blaspheming Our Lady. This is like the drunk priest. I have no obligation to attend this. This is an offense to Almighty God. I'm not going to participate. I think other people will say, well, you know, it's still licit, and, you know, I can handle it, and my kids are old enough and would do it once in a blue moon if we're traveling, and I meet my obligation, and I hate it, but I'm not there to support that, you know, deranged priest. I'm there to support God, whatever. And I can understand that point of view as well. So I'm not trying to, like, be Humpty Dumpty here and sit on the fence, but I'm just saying that both sides make credible arguments, and I think that reasonable people fall on either side. And but what every reasonable person does agree on is the bastardization of the Mass post Vatican II, the irreparable harm that Vatican II has done to the Church, and the absolute need to overturn it, to undo it, to undo all of it. There is no, and this is where I sounded perfectly reasonable 5 seconds ago. Here I'm about to sound totally, perfectly irreasonable, unreasonable. This is where I think Bishop Schneider goes wrong. Mm-hmm. He thinks you can just line item veto. You can just cross out the bad things and keep all the good things. And, you know, we can do an ultimate reform of the reform of the reform of the reform. We can put more lipstick on the pig. We can keep all the good things because there's so many base things in Vatican II. But the problem is that from top to bottom, from end to end, the intention of Vatican II is flawed. Therefore, all of its fruits, all of its fruits. And people say you throw the baby out with the bathwater. Well, you know what? If it's a demonic baby, I'm throwing it out.
I'm throwing it. Oh, see you later, Satan. You gotta go. I'm totally aligned with that. I think Father Robinson makes that point. I mean, he goes into the licit argument. He goes into like, because the question is posed to him, and he says, well, what if there's this like unicorn reverent Novus Ordo? He says, but there's so many problems that even that reverent Novus Ordo is still problematic, because again, it goes back to that fact. You got Bugnini the Destroyer, right? Remember Ghostbusters? You had Zool the Destructor. That's Bugnini. Bugnini is the Destructor. He comes along and destroys the faith. He destroys the church. He throws the entire community of faithful out with the bathwater. And he says, instead of this faithful community of faithful Catholics and everything, we need more people in the pews. And in order to get more people in the pews, we have to be more based. And this is where, or more woke, whatever the terminology is that everybody's using today. But the reality is everybody's going to go, wait a minute, you guys started out with gas and this and that. It's all interrelated. So we talk about the wars in the Middle East. Where is the Catholic community in Israel to stand up to Israel saying, you can't go and destroy their mosque. We don't believe that their religion's real either. But you don't see us lighting fire to their mosque. You can't do that. Now, there's other people. There's people on both sides of the argument who go, yeah, you say we should go to war. You sound like a leftist now. No, I don't. Because I have been all my time – I've said, look, I don't want to go to war in the Middle East, because war in the Middle East does nothing for us. Just like Charles Lindbergh said in World War II, he says, it does nothing for us to go to war in Europe. That's Europe's problem. That's their problem. Let them fight, and whoever the victor is, that's who will support. And if they come here, then we'll defend our homeland. But we don't need to go there to defend our homeland here. And it's the same situation. If we keep our big noses out of that problem, they need – I can tell you right now that with the war going on with Israel, the Muslims have no time to come over here and say, hey, let's poke that bear and get them to come to war to defend those guys. That's the last thing they want to do. They don't want to do that. They don't want to poke our face so that we go over there to war. So the only person, the only logical conclusion here is the only people that are going to poke our face is either us or Israel. And that's it. And how do they do that? They collapse our economy. Because what is the greatest motivator for war? Every general has always said it. Economics. Economics is the greatest motivator for war, because war stimulates economies. Okay? Every single one. It doesn't matter if it's a Marxist, a socialist, a communist, a Democrat, whatever. Doesn't matter what ideology they are. They all agree on one factor. Economics is a great motivator for war. And war stimulates economies. It gives you land. It gives you resources. It gives you control. That's what war is. Don't kid yourself into believing that there's any ideological war that we're out there fighting. We're not fighting ideological wars. That's a lie.
And it's an incredible PR stunt too, because we are told that we are fighting wars for ideology, for ideological reasons. We're spreading democracy. We're spreading democracy, Pat. Don't you want to spread democracy? Isn't democracy a good thing?
No, because let me give you a new one. We have a new one in our chat. Somebody just posted. They posted a chart. For those of you who don't know, when you look at the stock markets, you look at charts. There's candlesticks. There's line charts. There's all these kinds of charts that you have to learn. But there's also like these chart patterns. So as you study the market, both Mike and I know, there's these little different patterns that you watch. In this particular pattern, we're looking at overlaying lumber prices with oil prices. And guess what? They're both spiking at the same time. This is not good for anybody. What does this do? This brings all of our nation to a screeching halt. because as a builder, I could tell you how much money we lose because we bid these projects a year ago. And so we bid those projects at the material costs of a year ago, and we put in a certain factor of profitability on the material. It's usually roughly about 10%. So if the material cost goes above the 10% we had built in, we lose all profit. Okay, so we basically sell it. We're basically like buying it, then giving it to somebody and not making any money on it. It's not how you do business. Okay, we have to make money on it. The reason we have to make money on it is we have to pay our employees, put money in our business, do all this stuff. It's unfortunately for all you people who think that all capitalism is bad. Not all capitalism is bad. Just free market capitalism, American capitalism is bad. But we have to feed our families. We have to feed our employees' families. So we have to put profit in it. Now, if we break even, is that bad? Yeah. Is it the worst? No. Now, if the price goes 20% above what we initially sold it for, now we've taken money out of our own pocket to pay for that material. That means any profit we would have made on that, because usually labor, you don't make a whole lot of profit on. At best, maybe 5-10%. Maybe at best you sell a project at a 30%. That's the ultimate, right? Is to sell a project at a 30% margin. But if it just costs me 15% of that margin, that means I only make 15%. Most people say, well, that's good. Not really. Because I already built in for the next job a certain amount of money that has to go to that job. So it's a snowball effect. And a lot of people don't rightly understand business. You know who really doesn't understand it is economists. They don't get it because everything to them is theory. But those of us who live in the real world, we know that if you can't get rental cars for your project, well, you got a problem. You're going to get people back and forth to the project site. Now you have to go hopefully rent a bus, which means you have to wait and hope that everybody gets up on time at all the different stops, that you have to pick all these people up. You have to make sure you have enough gas in that bus to get them to the site and then get back to their home, their hotel, whatever else they're at. So all of these things cost money because now you need to hire somebody to drive the bus. So that's more profit. So all of this stuff is closely related, and it all goes back. It all goes back to certain changes we made in modernity, certain compromises that we made in modernity, where we said, I'm going to make this compromise because I want this amount of comfort. I'm going to make this compromise because I want a little bit of comfort. I'm going to make this compromise because I want more money. I'm going to start an OnlyFans, and my son knows about it, so it's okay because I want comfort. I want to buy more stuff. Now, if you think OnlyFans was bad before, let me explain to everybody what happened in the Weimar. Everybody was selling their wives, their daughters, even their sons on the streets just to buy a loaf of bread. So trust me when you hear that these things are happening now, this is only the beginning of a very bad time period. And just remember, this all started in the 1920s. Yeah. We're in the 2020s.
Well, and that's what happened in the 1820s,
1720s, it all follows a trajectory.
Yeah, no, it's like every 100 years history repeats itself. Here's a sobering headline. World Economic Forum warns of cyber attack leading to systematic collapse of the global financial system. This was April 9th, 2021, 1 month ago. 1 month and 2 days from today. A report published last year by the WEF policy initiative calls for the merging of Wall Street banks, their regulators, and intelligence agencies as necessary to confront an allegedly imminent cyber attack that will collapse the existing financial system. 32 days ago.
It really is a situation that I think nobody's paying attention to. I think a lot of people say they're paying attention, but I honestly don't think that they're preparing themselves. I don't think that they're preparing their families. And maybe some are. I'm not going to say nobody is, but I am going to say that there's a good portion of society that's not getting things ready. They're not presenting themselves in a capacity to be prepared for what is coming. And I think a lot of them largely think that this is just going to blow over. That it's just going to be, it happens. It'll be fine in a week. I'll just stay home for a week. No big deal. I'm working remote these days. You know, what do I care? You know, after hours trading. Look at this. Another chart just came up. Okay. After hours trading. Tomorrow morning is going to be, I think it's going to be a Black Tuesday. This is my prediction. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see pre-market openings that are going to be insane. I think you're going to see people dumping like crazy, which is going to dump the market. I think Biden has already been a failure. He said he was even the left is saying it because he was promising a million jobs, a million jobs, a million jobs. They needed a million. It couldn't be anything less than a million. It couldn't have been 900,000. Had to be a million jobs. And he fell super short. It was 227,000 and unemployment ticked up to 6.1%. Now, everybody knows that 6.1 is a false number. If they're saying 6.1, add 6 to that, you're at 12.1% unemployment. Because you have to take into consideration people who are taking a huge pay cut, people who are taking limited hours, and people who have just left the workforce as a whole. So those are numbers that are not factored into the official unemployment number. And this is something that has been talked about by people in the market time and time again, because the economists and the government never mention that, and they try to play that down. But real-time unemployment is about 12%, probably more, because I don't even believe that 6.1% number. I think that number is closer to 8, which brings us closer to almost 20% unemployment in this country. But yet we're going to bring 70,000 more people into this country because we got to feel good about helping the world, and we don't care about our neighbors. Because according to Biden and the left and even a lot of people on the right, your neighbor is everywhere. Honestly, yeah. I'm sorry to say it. A lot of people are going to get mad at me, and I don't care. I tell them this all the time. They give me hate mail, and I go, sucks to be you. Because honestly, I don't care about people who live in crappy countries. They need to make their country better because it's just a way of their comfort. Their comfort is to not work hard to make their country better, but to go to another country, suck up all the resources, make all the money, send it back to their country, then go back to their country in 5-10 years and live like a king. And that's the reality of what really happens. Out of all the people that come here, the reality of the situation is that the amount of people that were coming here to really become assimilated into the nation, that stopped in I'm going to say roughly about the 80s. Anybody who came here after the 80s, let's say anybody came here in the last 30 years or so, they were coming here as economic refugees. They were not coming here to assimilate and become American. And it's the same thing in Italy and France and Germany, Spain, and the list goes on. And so you get these collapses because these collapses come from what I said before. And I'm going to put my closing statement here, if I would, is that the more people you bring into the developed nations, the more resources you need in the developed nations. The less people that are in the underdeveloped nations where your corporations are taking advantage of to manufacture the goods, so the less people they have to work there, which means you have less supply. But you have accelerated demand. It's simple supply side economics. Even a stupid economics professor could figure this one out. If you have more demand in a place, but you have less supply coming from someplace else, or you have shutdowns and you have gas shortages and you have boats clogging up a canal, which we talked about before, that boat is still sitting in the canal. It's not in the canal that is able to have flow, but that particular boat is still sitting in an area they are not allowed to leave because that boat, the Egyptian government is ready to put a lien on it for the payment of the effort to free that boat, which is in the billions. So who's going to pay that?
Yep. I look at it and I say, look, I recommend if you're listening to this podcast or if you listen to all the way to the end, fill up your gas tanks, keep them full. So that's a good practice. go to the grocery store, have several weeks of supply, work on the supply if you can. This isn't the end. This is not going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah.
I mean, look, things are going to spike. There's going to be an aberration in the market. There's going to be a shortage for a while for a lot of people in the United States. Will it get worked out? Yeah, maybe, maybe not. Biden for sure is going to do something. Pat is predicting price controls or
rationing.
Yeah, or rationing or whatever. It's possible. This is not their masterstroke here. This is not their final play. Okay, mm-hmm. So I'm going to rush this podcast out as quickly as possible. It's very late on the evening of the 10th. It's already early morning on the 11th, depending on which time zone you're in. I'm going to get this out quickly. No editing, no music, no frills. If you're listening to this podcast, this is another wake-up call, just like Texas was a wake-up call, just like coronavirus was a wake-up call. You've got to take proactive measures to take care of your family. And even if people, and I think this is the point I'm going to end on. Even if people around you think you're crazy, even if people around you think, hey, why don't you relax and watch the football game on the afternoons? Why are you always taking care of your cars? And why are you always working on your property and doing all of your things and understanding solar and figuring out how to wire your house? Why are you all working on alternative water sources? That's so, you know, why can't you just relax, just Netflix and chill? This speaks to the point that Patrick and I always land on at the end of our shows, which is you have to despise comfort in this world. You have to despise it for practical reasons like surviving, and you have to despise it for supernatural reasons like developing an authentic, real spiritual life, a prayer life with Almighty God. So even if people around you think you're crazy and you're running off to the grocery store at 11 p.m. on a Monday night, and you're stocking up on essential things like matches, water bottles, trash bags even, rope, you know, random things that you are going to need. It wasn't crazy a year and a half ago when everyone did it in March, when there were food shortages, when coronavirus shut people down, when the government stepped in and said, your business is not essential, you must stay at home, you've got to social distance, you must wear a mask, all those things that you thought you could do, you can't do anymore, your schools are closed, your jobs are closed, you do what we tell you to do. The communist takeover of the government of the United States happened right underneath our noses, and it doesn't matter if you're getting laughed at when you're at the grocery store buying some water bottles. People are laughing at you. Fine. You know what? You'll be laughing at them someday. I'd rather be 5 years too early than 5 minutes too late. So that's my final point. Is that it?
I was thinking you were done. I was like, okay, we're done. Bye.
No, I'll give you the last word. Say something to that, man. I mean, land the plane here.
Here's my last thought. I'm going to put this out without editing, and then he's waiting for me to say something again. you see how this goes, folks? This is totally unedited. This is not like Scrojax sitting there. This is the 1 Peter 5 minute. I have 1 minute to tell you what I believe right now, because in a minute from now, I'm going to change that. I do agree with you. This is not the master stroke, but go out and read Carl Schwab. Okay. Klaus Schwabi, whatever the heck his name is. Go out and read him, because this is all planned in his master plan. What phase of this master plan it is, it's not lined out. They don't go, here's phase one, here's phase two, here's phase three, and this is what we're going to do. It's not like that. And it's never like that. And it's never going to be like that. There are signs you're given. You're given signs. Pay attention to the signs. And as we always say, forget comfort. You know, comfort is weakness. That's all it is. You know, you could work out a ton. You could have all the muscles in the world. But if you're always chasing comfort, you're the weakest man in the room. Because the guy who doesn't value comfort, he's gonna survive, and you're not. And that's really the reality of the situation. This could be the beginning. And as we know, World War I to World War II to where we came, that's about 50 years of uncomfortability in the world. So from 1900 to 1950, all pretty bad times in the world, not a whole lot of good going on in those 50 years. So this could be 50 years. This could be 50 years of everybody being uncomfortable. So listen to the show, and I hope you take some advice, you know, fill up your car, like Mike said, and, you know, if it gets down a quarter of a tank, fill it up. What's it going to hurt? You know what? If you got a full tank of gas, you know how many miles your car can go on a full tank of gas. You don't need to put dangerous containers of gasoline in your garage. Because I will say it can be very dangerous, especially if you're stockpiling a lot of gas and you're doing it in things that are not meant to hold gas. Don't put it in mason jars. you know, just don't do those things. Those are honestly, those are bad things waiting to happen. But just keep your car fueled up. You know, you can't heat your house with gas unless you're planning on burning a gas fire in your backyard or something like that. So the only thing that gas can do is fill up your car. So keep your car filled up. That's what I could say. Buy a pump so you don't have to siphon it with a tube and a, you know, you don't want to do that. Trust me. There's little pumps you can buy for $5, and that's
buy a pump, and as our the usurper in chief, fake Catholic Joe Biden says, buy a pump action shotgun too.
Yep.
Buy a shotgun.
Hey, best advice he gave. Best advice he gave. Does a lot more damage than some of them other ones. Just want to say that. Preferred weapon of a lot of people is a shotgun. Trust me. Go Google what a shotgun wound looks like compared to an AR-15 wound. Let me tell you which one looks a lot worse. It's my preferred gun. Anyway.
And thanks for joining me, Trad Patrick of Rights and Duties on YouTube, Rights and Duties. You can check it out. It's a great YouTube channel. One of the fastest growing in Catholic media. Trad Patrick is on Twitter as well. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. I have a feeling we're going to talk again this week.
Oh, I definitely have a feeling about that one.
Yeah. Until then, be well, sir.
You too.